Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, March 26, 2024. South Sudan Constitution Review Commission says it lacks funds for engaging the views of the citizens.
I hope that the commission will organize another conversation to only look at land and other resources, because it requires a lot of attention and a lot of understanding. If we don't handle it well, this might spark conflict.
And Sudanese women who fled to Egypt tell their stories of how they escaped from Sudan.
Bodies were laying on the street, and the stench. Some of the bodies were covered by cardboard, and others were not. I put my son's head down so he doesn't see these scenes.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The chairperson of the National Constitution Review Commission in South Sudan says his office is facing challenges as he waits for the government to finalize a budget. The commission conducted a one-week workshop for validation and experience sharing between its members and experts from the region. For VOA News, Juliana Shapai has more from Juba.
Riang Tier, chairperson of the commission, says lack of funds has prevented his office from delivering the benchmarks of the completion of a permanent constitution.
Currently, without this budget being made available, we cannot do the things that we are supposed to do. The little that we are now doing, we are doing it with the support from the development partners. And this is what has kept us going. And the delay of the release of the budget means eating away from the time that we are supposed to be using to produce the permanent constitution.
The National Constitution Review Commission is mandated to start public consultations across South Sudan on the proposed permanent constitution. The 58 members of the commission were appointed by President Salva Kiir in December last year. During their swearing-in ceremony, President Kiir urged them to move with speed and complete their work before December 2024 scheduled elections. Awag Bier is the deputy chair lady of the National Constitutional Review. She says the commission has no money for its proposed activities.
First of all, we are not able to properly plan the timelines to begin our work. And the most important aspect of this constitution-making process is the people, how we educate them on what the constitution is and what it means for them, and then how we get their views on what they want to see in the constitution. This is no small task. It's expensive. It requires us to send people to all 10 states and the 3 administrative areas, to spend weeks, if not months, speaking to the people, giving them all the opportunities they would like to articulate their views, their vision, and to fully understand what this is about. It's not cheap.
The commission contracted 4 experts to enlighten its members on the constitutional review process. Lona Merkaje is a South Sudanese activist with the South Sudan Democratic Engagement Monitoring and Observation Program. She is contracted by the commission to share her understanding of fiscal federalism. Lona says the commission needs to do more to complete its task before December elections. She says South Sudanese are eager to discuss issues close to their hearts.
As I was making my presentation, I picked on 2 examples because fiscal federalism is basically the money federalism and how resources get to the people. And many people would talk about taxation and utilization of tax, but also fiscal federalism relates to how resources are managed and how those resources are distributed. And one of the resources I picked was land, and that was really, really intriguing because there were so many questions that came up, and it confirmed the fact that we usually say land is a very emotive issue in this country, but also land is very sentimental. And I hope that the Commission will organize another conversation to only look at land and other resources, because it requires a lot of attention and a lot of understanding. If we don't handle it well, this might spark conflict.
Earlier last week, the Troika countries of Norway, UK, and the United States issued a statement calling on South Sudanese to complete 10 remaining tasks, including the National Constitutional Review process as spelled out on the implementation matrix of the 2018 peace agreement. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Cairo. As the conflict between Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces approaches the one-year mark, the country's women continue to bear the brunt of unimaginable hardships and severe human rights violations. Reporter Angie Umar has this from Cairo.
When Sudan's pro-democracy movement led to the removal of President Omar Hassan al-Bashir in 2019, women played a leading role in the revolution for democracy and change. Women have long faced marginalization, harassment, and sexual violence in Sudan, and they made up a significant portion of the protesters. Today, they suffer the brunt of the civil war that began in mid-April last year. More than 6 million people, including some 105,000 pregnant women, have been forced to leave their homes since the war began, according to the United Nations. Out of the 1.2 million people who fled to neighboring countries, almost 90% are women and children. A report from Human Rights Watch says the RSF committed a large number of rapes and other war crimes during attacks in West Darfur's capital, El Geneina, between late April and late June 2023. During this year's International Women's History Month, the global community recognizes the hardships faced by Sudanese women who have experienced rape, forced displacement, and loss of their livelihoods due to the conflict. A Khartoum woman, we are referring to her by first name, Hana, for safety reasons, says her life was upended when the conflict reached her neighborhood. She tells VOA she was forced to leave her home. Bodies were laying on the street, and the stench. Some of the bodies were covered by cardboard, and others were not. I put my son's head down so he doesn't see these scenes. But he could hear his siblings screaming. Women, children, and men were running in different directions. I was just staying with my children. Even my oldest daughter was running and screaming, "Mom, Mom." Reports from the United Nations have documented violations against women in Darfur, including murder, forced displacement, and rape. Some of the victims were children. The violence is reminiscent of the devastation that occurred in the region two decades ago, when more than 200,000 people were killed. The repeated detention of women on false espionage charges or because of their ethnicity has been a serious concern raised by volunteers and human rights organizations. The impact of the conflict on Sudan's education sector has also been devastating, especially for female students. Many girls are at risk of being forced into child marriages or becoming displaced. According to UNICEF, 49% of girls are missing out on primary education. As of 2017, well before the current conflict began, 3 million children have been left out of Sudan's education system. Half of them are girls. Sudan's legal system follows a strict form of Sharia law, which limits the rights of women. Sharia has seeped into Sudanese culture, thus affecting the quality and quantity of girls' education. Huda Shafiq, a feminist peace activist, says the Islamist rule in Sudan has deprived women and girls of their basic human rights.
A big part of the program, we're heavily targeting women in a way that they have founded and changed a lot of laws, for example, that aimed mainly to control women, to really control their working, their access to work opportunities, their access to education opportunities, their existence in the public spaces, in the outside areas, in their engagement in the public life, but also socially and in the workplaces as well.
Displaced women face many challenges, including the loss of their homes, belongings, and personal security. Many have been separated from their families and have been unable to reunite due to the chaos of war. Ehsan Faghiri is a human rights activist and chair of the initiative No to Oppression Against Women in Sudan. She urges awareness be spread across the country about women's rights.
If we spread awareness among women, we need to change all the laws made by Muslim Brothers or al-Bashir regime, the law of the public order law, criminal law, and even the family law. We need to completely to eradicate those and to have another laws which are very consistent with the laws of the international agreements.
The war has severely restricted the freedom of women living with conservative extended families. Strict patriarchal structures and cultural norms limit their movement and how they dress, forcing displaced women to conform and give up their independence. Despite their immense challenges, Sudanese women have shown remarkable resilience. They continue to fight for their rights, advocate for peace, and support their communities. Women continue to protect their children and strive to rebuild their lives. For VOA News, I'm Inja Omar in Cairo, Egypt.
A senior U.S. official says the United States is extending more than $47 million U.S. dollars in humanitarian assistance for the emergency response in Sudan and neighboring countries like Chad and South Sudan. For VOA News, Ruben Chama reports from Nairobi.
Speaking during an online news briefing late Tuesday, the U.S. Assistant Secretary for Population, Refugees and Migration, Julieta Force Noyes, said she recently traveled to Ethiopia and Chad and met with senior government and humanitarian officials, including Chadian Prime Minister Success Masra.
To that end, I was proud to announce in my meeting with Chad's Prime Minister Masra more than $47 million in humanitarian assistance for the emergency response in Sudan and neighboring countries, including Chad and South Sudan. That amount of money brings the total U.S. humanitarian assistance for people in Sudan and neighboring countries to more than $968 million since last fiscal year.
Noyes also met with Ethiopian government officials.
Since early 2023, Ethiopia has welcomed nearly 50,000 refugees from Sudan. At a time of great instability in the Horn of Africa, Ethiopia's support for displaced populations remains absolutely critical.
In both countries, Noyes said she held meetings to discuss refugee resettlement and humanitarian assistance across the continent, including the protection of humanitarian workers. Noyes said the United States will continue to work with international and local partners to provide life-saving support to the millions of people affected by the devastating conflict in Sudan.
We are committed to working with other members of the international community to help alleviate the suffering of over 1 million refugees forced to flee their homes due to violence, with more arriving daily, as I saw during my visit. Both Ethiopia and Chad are regional leaders playing essential roles in the Sudan response and broader humanitarian efforts.
The United States is the leading humanitarian donor to the global emergency response to the Sudan crisis. Senior U.S. officials have urged the warring parties to allow unhindered humanitarian access, engage in direct talks, agree to a ceasefire, and end hostilities immediately. According to the Associated Press, the aid package is expected to help alleviate the suffering of nearly 25 million people, including refugees who have fled Sudan into Chad and South Sudan. The conflict between the Sudanese army and the rival paramilitary rapid support forces has left 18 million people, more than a third of the population, facing acute food insecurity. The UN says up to 15,000 people have been killed since the fighting broke out in mid-April last year. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Senegal's new leader talks tough. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Senegal's president-elect vows to fight corruption, rebuild institutions, and especially unite the country. This comes after a failed attempt to postpone the elections by outgoing President Macky Sall plunged the country into political crisis. VOA's Nairobi bureau chief Mariama Diallo is in Dakar and has this report.
In his first public address, Senegalese president-elect Bassirou Diomaye Faye thanked his supporters and pledged to bring solutions to some of the problems he says his country is facing. I will govern with humility and in transparency, the president-elect said, adding, I will work to get rid of corruption in all sectors and will work toward rebuilding our institutions. Fay said it's time to bring calm to the country after outgoing President Macky Sall tried to postpone the February elections until December, plunging the country into a brief political crisis. La réconciliation nationale et la reconstruction des bases. He said the country needs national reconciliation and rebuilding our fundamental ways of living together. The pre-electoral crisis we lived through, he said, cost some people their lives and many were jailed. We hope to turn the page and reconcile people's hearts and the Senegalese people. Sunday's official election results have not yet been published, but Faye's supporters say they are satisfied with what they have seen so far. One supporter, Nyanya Fati, says we were hoping to win with over 70% in the first round, but it seems like we are 57%. It's only preliminary numbers, she adds. We hope the final number will be higher. Another Faye supporter, Sayer Kebe, says we lived through a moment that almost pushed Senegal into chaos, but thank God everything is back in place now. We had a transparent presidential election. Earlier at the ruling party's coalition headquarters, Amadou Ba, the coalition lead candidate who lost the election to Faye, told reporters about a conversation he had with the president-elect.
Je lui souhaite réussite et succès.
Ba said, I wish him success and may God accompany him as he carries out his various missions and goals for our glorious nation and for the well-being of our population. As Ba's supporters try to digest their candidate's loss in the first round that saw 17 candidates vying for the top job, tensions of the last few months seem to be fading away and being replaced by the hope that Senegal's reputation as a beacon of democracy in the region will soon be restored. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Dakar,
meanwhile,
Senegal.
Meanwhile, in Cameroon, thousands of civilians stand out on the streets and towns and villages calling for Cameroon's 91-year-old President Paul Biya to be a candidate in the 2025 presidential elections. Supporters say Biya is the only one who can bring peace and development to the country. But the opposition says Biya must leave office after running Cameroon for a very long time. Mokiendo Nkinzika reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Several hundred people sang in Cameroon's capital Yaoundé on Sunday that President Paul Biya should accept the nomination for the Cameroon People's Democratic Movement or CPDM party in the 2025 presidential election. Biya created the CPDM on March 24, 1985, 3 years after his predecessor, Cameroon's first president, Ahmadou Ahidjo, stepped down due to ill health and handed power to Biya. Biya has been president of Cameroon since 1982 and leader of his CPDM party since 1985. Senior CPDM official Fru Jonathan says during his party's 39th anniversary on Sunday, party officials organized rallies in all Cameroon towns and villages to ask civilians to support Biya as their candidate in the 2025 elections.
He is our natural candidate. He is strong, healthy. Government activity is going on normally. There's peace, there's unity in our country. There's economic growth. We think that you don't change a winning team. If there's any challenger, let him come up. But we've not seen any challenger who can beat our candidate. So we all rely on him and call on him to continue to rule and bring our country to emergence, as that is his vision.
Biya has not said if he will be a candidate. Fru said Biya, in 41 years of leadership, has increased the number of state-owned universities from 1 to 11. Cameroon senior state functionaries appointed by Biya, along with Biya's party officials, credit the long-serving leader for constructing at least 6,000 kilometers of roads, providing electricity and water to towns and villages, and building several hundred classrooms and hospitals. But Cameroon's opposition and civil society disagree with that positive assessment, saying under Biya, the Cameroon Bank and the Fund for Agricultural Development created to fund farmers' projects crumbled. The opposition also says corruption has become widespread during Biya's rule, with Transparency International ranking Cameroon as the most corrupt country in 1998 and 1999. 44-year-old Cabral Libi, an opposition parliamentarian with Cameroon's Party for National Reconciliation, or PCRN, placed third in Cameroon's 2018 presidential elections.
Être jeune au Cameroun aujourd'hui, c'est être privé de voix, de choix.
Libi says Cameroonian youth will not continue to watch Biya cripple the economy, deprive civilians of their liberties and freedoms, and rule Cameroon with an iron fist while now showing signs of being ruler for life. He says Biya is the cause of sorrows brought about by extremely high unemployment, underemployment, and crisis in the English-speaking Western regions that have claimed more than 6,000 lives. Libi said Cameroon opposition and civil society are organizing themselves to present a candidate to oust Biya, whom they describe as elderly and frail, to the point he is hardly seen in public. Libi said Cameroon needs young, dynamic leaders to salvage the country from underdevelopment. Opposition and civil society say many youths were hired to take part in rallies to give the false impression that Biya is popular. Both the government and Biya's CPDM party officials deny that civilians, especially poor youths, were hired. At 91, Biya is the oldest leader in the world and the second longest-serving president after his neighbor Teodoro Obiang-Gema Bassongo of Equatorial Guinea. Biya's party says he has won all presidential elections since the return of multi-party politics in Cameroon in 1990, but the opposition says previous elections have been marred by fraud. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Russian pro-government media are ignoring the Islamic State group's claim of responsibility for Friday's attack at a Moscow concert hall, instead focusing on unsubstantiated allegations that the mass killings was linked to Ukraine. Elizabeth Chana reports from VOA Moscow Bureau.
As rescue crews continued the search for the missing Monday, pro-Kremlin media ignored reports that the Islamic State group was responsible for the attack. The director of the propaganda channel RT claims on social media that the Islamic State group's claim of responsibility is false. At the same time, an editorial on the state-run RIA Novosti says, quote, "The Kyiv Caliphate is launching a campaign of terror against Russia," unquote. Russian authorities have shown several men whom President Vladimir Putin himself alleges were caught trying to flee to Ukraine. Analysts have cast doubts on the allegation. They include Alex Kokhtarov, a country risk analyst at S&P Global Market Intelligence.
The border with Ukraine is fundamentally a front line. There are no crossing points from Bryansk region into Ukraine. The border has been thoroughly militarized. There is very heavy presence of the Russian armed forces and the FSB.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has dismissed Putin's claim of Ukrainian involvement. In blaming Kyiv for the attack, the Russian media deny that Islamist extremists have a military objective in Russia. Some observers disagree. Among them is Marta Ter, a specialist on radical Islam in Russia.
The Islamic State considers Russia one of its main enemies, along with the United States and Iran, due to the wars that ISIS considers holy. Russia was in Afghanistan. It is in Syria alongside Bashar al-Assad until today, and the wars against the Muslims in the Caucasus.
Others say the attack will help the Kremlin justify arguments for carrying out a new mobilization and buildup of its forces, which are under pressure after 2 years of full-scale war. With more than 130 dead, the attack on March 22nd goes down as one of the bloodiest in the Russian Federation's recent history. Some now worry the Kremlin will use it as an excuse for Moscow to step up its assault on Ukraine. For the VOA Moscow Bureau, Elizabeth Chernev, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, March 26, 2024. We now leave you with the song New Sudan by Musa Juma.
Sana Africa, anya anya.
We've been listening to Musa Juma and the song New Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Saida Hamdun, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Bargazel personalities, Southern region. Eliaba, Osuru Tiama Texana. William, John Tiama Texana. Mokwe, Johnny Tiama Texana.